So I'll just do a bit of reading from different places. Ajahn Chah was born into an affectionate and respected household, one of the wealthier families in a close-knit community. The northeastern villages of those days, isolated by forests and vulnerable to the vagaries of the weather and the caprice of spirits, put great store on sharing, generosity, and harmony. The model was of an extended family, and over the years, marriages between inhabitants of a village tended to make it one in fact. Houses were made of wood, roofed with grass thatch, and raised on stilts as protection from floods and wild animals. They were placed close together with no fixed boundaries between them. Life was conducted on a large open space upstairs, with rooms used only for sleeping. People not only heard their neighbors' family dramas, they could see them as well. But there was no concept of privacy, much less a desire for it. The villagers subscribed to respect for monks, elders, and spirits, consideration for the feelings of others, and a sense of shame. They relished laughter and conversation. Ajahn Chah grew up with a strong sense of community and place, and the gift of the gab. The adjective that was often used to describe Ajahn Chah in his old age, ebullient, is the one that comes most readily to mind when picturing him as a child. He was a chunky, exuberant young lad, and yet, at the same time, keen and perceptive. Nobody's fool. He was full of fun and vigor, with the sunny, buoyant disposition so common to the Laos. And that's the area of Thailand that Ajahn Chah grew up in, is a Lao-speaking and more Lao culture. The northeastern Thai is a Lao. Their roots are more in Laos. And actually, when I first arrived in Thailand, northeast of Thailand, we're first setting up the monastery for the international community. The old people oftentimes say, rather than saying, "Oh, I'll be going down to Bangkok," or "My children are going down to Bangkok," they would say, "Oh, they're going to Thailand." So it's a distinct, language and culture. But even then, he showed a glint of steel in his ways. He was both a talker and a doer, the natural leader of his group of friends, the one whom everyone wanted to be close to and without whom all games and adventures seemed dull. Ajahn Chah bore the round face and flat lion's nose common to his race. More distinctively, his mouth was unusually wide and compelling, as if destined one day to have memorable things to say. While in charming contrast to the powerful symmetry of his face, his right ear was larger than the left. His childhood friends remember Ajahn Chah's mildness. They say he never enforced his dominance with bullying or coercion. No one can recall him in a fight. He was a mediator in his companions' disputes and, from an early age, was drawn by the yellow robe. He relates a childhood memory of playing the role of a monk. He would sit sternly on an old bamboo bed with a pakoma, it's an all-purpose cloth that the villagers use. They usually wrap it around. They do all sorts of things with it. It's usually wrapped around their waist. With the pakoma draped over his left shoulder like a robe. And his friends would play the parts of the laity. The mealtime is probably the only event in the monk's daily life that is interesting enough to lend itself to drama, and it was that which the children would enact. Ajahn Chah would ring a bell, and his friends would bring a tray of fruit and cool water. After bowing three times, they would offer it to him meekly. He, in turn, would give them the five precepts of the Buddhist layperson and a blessing. So these are very early days.